stories don't define you. How you tell them will. Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief story maker of Elkins Consulting.
When we share stories, whether in our personal or business lives, how we share them makes a difference in how we remember them and in how we're perceived by the people we're sharing them with. When you're listening to this podcast, I encourage you to listen and consider your own related stories. To listen and think about which stories in your life might have impacted you in a similar way. And think about how you share those stories and the messages they carry for you and for the people who are hearing them.
Well, today is a special treat. I get to interview a guy that interviewed me a little while ago for his podcast. And we met through LinkedIn, which is pretty common, I think, for my podcast guests. But this is Adam Lewis Walker. And I just have to, for our listeners, just so you know, the reason he goes by Adam Lewis Walker is because if you search for Adam Walker on Amazon for his books, you're not going to find him. So, Adam Lewis Walker,
welcome. I'm not a serial killer as well. Apparently, some people think people with three names are serial killers. Just want to put that out there. That's not been proven.
I do not remember where I saw that, but I thought it was so funny. It's years ago I saw that. And then ever since then, people who go by three names, I always, you know, I think about that.
You always give them a second look. Do a bit more background checks.
Yeah. I think we will meet in a very busy coffee shop.
Yeah, you're happy this interview is done. Yeah, virtually. Definitely.
It's terrible. Well, Awaken Your Alpha is Adam's show. And it's really about finding the part of you that is resilient and curious and powerful. And alpha often is associated with male, alpha male, or alpha female. When you think about it in this context, it's really about awakening that leadership part of you, no matter where you sit, which that message just really resonates with me. So thank you for joining me, Adam.
Thanks for having me. I loved your explanation. Yeah, it's all about personal leadership would, you know, kind of sum it up. And so I really like that some of the points you pulled out there and caught up on. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. No, well, it resonates with me. That message really resonates with me. So I invited Adam to speak with us because he helps people get the TEDx of their dreams. And he just generally helps people find clarity in what they want to do and develops them to help them actually accomplish their goals. And I love that. To me, being the foundation for somebody to leap up or step up is just probably one of the most encouraging and inspiring positions to be in, to be that foundational person that helps others. And I think that's why I wanted to interview you for my podcast.
Ah, awesome. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I got a couple of podcasts now, and the Awaken Your Alpha has evolving into a podcast network. And kind of the thing that kind of brings it all together is in terms of the Awaken Your Alpha is like amplify your mission. So, you know, to play a bigger game or, you know, have bold actions and bold ambitions of what you want to do, if that's what you want. And that bold ambition can be as varied as, you know, you ambitiously want to not pursue certain things and, you know, really double down on areas of your life that are important to you. And with the, you know, the Talk Accelerator and the TEDx kind of platform, that just helps people amplify their message, which may be part of their mission, you know, so everyone's different. And that's, you know, for me, the podcast, the publishing and the TEDx talks, the presenting have things that are really kind of amplified my mission and message. So it's kind of what I'm all about. And yeah, I dig into that stuff and it really fires me up.
Yes, I can hear that, which is awesome. So I always ask my guests at the very beginning of the podcast to share something about themselves that most people probably wouldn't know about you.
Oh,
something that's not on your resume or your LinkedIn bio. And the reason I ask that is because I think it gives our listeners a different context for the stories that they hear later on in our conversation.
Yeah. Okay. First thing that jumped into my mind, but then I did a blog post about this years ago, so it's not some people, but it's not like what I got charged by a silverback, like a 200 kilogram silverback in Rwanda in 2006. Yeah.
Whoa.
That, I mean, and that doesn't come up. It came up a while. Like, I haven't spoken about that for a long time. That's not like in any of my information. That was an experience. that's something. Yes, wow. Oh, I linked to that, I suppose, to kind of wrap that all up. I quit my job, got married, and honeymooned around the world, backpacked around the world for a year, 27 countries in a year. We bowed out of society. And went.
So, wow. Yeah, I didn't. Was, I. That's amazing.
Yeah,
so you got like, charged by a gorilla.
His name was Charles.
Charles. He had a name. So it wasn't in the wild?
Yes, but they'd named him. So in Rwanda, Uganda, the mountain gorillas there's not many of them, but they have, because of the areas kind of quite war-torn and conflict and borders a few countries, they have armed guards at least aware of where they are. So they don't like babysit them, but they know the gorillas are, you know, in this area, in a, you know, and they need to keep, for poaching and stuff, they need to keep rough tabs on where they are, and ultimately they're in there protecting them, at least keeping an eye out for poachers and, you know, dealing with that side of stuff as much as they can. So there's, you know, a big silverback like Charles, so they have their own family, so they're in the mountains somewhere, they're completely wild, but they're aware of certain groups because they have their territory, and, you know, they don't they protect that group, and there's one alpha male, as it were, and this one was Charles, and he's a big dude. And they did say to us, you know, there's a slim chance, you know, just to be aware, you have to have all the safety briefing. These are wild animals. You know, they can do what they want ultimately. And we're not going to stop them, you know, if they want to run you down and beat you. That's up to them. We're not going to shoot them or do any of that because, you know, they're more important. We got that. We're choosing to come into their environment. And they said if they do charge, it's very, very rare. But 90% of the time, it's a show of strength, dominance, it's a fake charge. Uh-huh. Like, okay, but you wouldn't know if it wasn't fake until it was too late. But so the briefing we got was, if that does happen, your idea is to make yourself look as small and puny as possible. Look at the ground, don't look in the eyes, because that's just, you know, a show of aggression, and yeah, just look puny, and it shouldn't continue the charge, as it were. So the situation there was, we there was one New Zealand guy in our group. He was a big rugby playing guy. He wore a black jacket, and he literally looked like he could be adopted. He was a beast. And me and this other Australian, when we found the group of you have to go trekking for quite some time, and when you found we found them, officially you're not supposed to get within, it was something like 10 meters or something like that. As soon as it was thick jungle when we found them, so they were already, a little baby one was trying to like come towards us. So we're trying to keep our distance, but the Charles was down the hill. We could just see his big sloping forehead down the hill in the bushes. So eventually we said, oh, can we go down and try and get a little bit closer, get a better view? So they're like, okay. So we're sneaking down the hill. I slipped down the hill. And there was three of us. I was the third one down. I slipped and come sliding down the hill towards the gorilla.
Oh.
Yeah. So as I slip down and like hit the guy in front of me, I look up and Charles is just blasting towards us through straight for all of us. So me and the other guy go like oh, look, like trying to look down at the ground, like, oh my god. And the guy at the front, he did completely the opposite. He's like, hands up in the air. At least he was at the front, and then luckily Charles just ran straight towards us. About a meter from us, it just veered off 45 degree angle past us, and then picked up a younger gorilla and threw it in the bush, and then just strutted around looking pleased with himself while we were just like going
shitting yourselves.
Yes, basically. And then I'm not joking, he looked so smug. And he showed us who the daddy was. And then he just was, he literally got in, I got a photo. He then sat down behind us with his, you know, chin on his hand and just looked very happy. And and then we were all just like, oh my God. But it was fun. We didn't get beaten. So.
Oh my gosh, that could have ended in a very different way.
Yeah. So that, not everyone knows that. That was.
That's awesome. So I have to say, it seems to me that that's kind of a pivotal moment in your life in terms of a podcast called Awaken Your Alpha. I mean, really.
Know your place. Nature is the daddy as well. You know, there's certain things you don't want to mess up.
When you apply what he did to life, he didn't necessarily have to beat you. He just had to show you that he was the boss.
Yeah, do not mess with him. This is his arena. Yeah.
When you think about it, we all kind of have to do that with our internal messages, with our inner critics that are mean to us. We have to tell it who's the boss. We have to awaken the alpha inside us. And so I keep thinking about this few hundred pound gorilla coming at you. That's it. If there's not any better visual with that.
And interestingly as well, you know, another thing, it seemed to be almost every animal in Africa, this is generally good advice. You've got to stand your ground as well. Yes, I looked as puny as I could. And like eventually if they did attack you, the next option was to go into like the fetal position. But if you turn and run, most animals, especially in Africa, it seems, which can't help it, they will chase after you and basically kill you. So
That's the other thing, so
you just stand your ground. We got charged by a bull elephant. Same thing. If we'd have run, like the guy said, if you run, if the elephant doesn't get you, I'll shoot you. So it's just like, do not run. Because we did it, you know, it was on foot in Zimbabwe, did a safari, but on foot. So literally lions can jump out at you and stuff. So it was, you know, everything in Africa seems to charge at you and just don't run.
Wow. So Africa is the alpha.
I loved Africa. It's my favorite.
The whole continent is the alpha. Wow. That sounds amazing. Huh. So tell me, when you started to think about your podcast title, mm-hmm. what played into that?
Not many people ask that. So yeah, I don't really have which is good. I don't have a canned answer. So it really came from, you know, after I had a pole vault accident and I was trying to get to the Olympics, and I was just known as, not Adam Lewis-Walker, I was known as Adam the pole vaulter. I had a pole vault accident in the rain in the 2008, and I went from, you know, having a very clear goal and mission and kind of lifestyle to being completely lost, had the legs pulled from under me, as it were, and I didn't know what I was doing for a while, and I had a lot of spare time because, well, I was basically a professional rehabber because I had to have like multiple operations of my knee over a 2-year period, like crutches, rehab operation, and so I hit rock bottom about a year later, and then it was just clawing my way out. And that's really had to like literally awaken my alpha every day and battle for it. And it wasn't working, and just slowly get out of it. The thought of awaken your alpha. Yeah. I can't remember. It just, you know, it's got a nice ring to it. And then the kind of the meaning behind it has developed over time. And so it means a lot to me now, but at the time it just came from there. Yeah.
Isn't that funny the way that happens, where something seems to pop out of nowhere and then it grows on you and you start to read different things into it as you live it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And definitely. And as you coach others to do it. I know the same thing happened when I came up with your stories don't define you, because somebody was saying something. It was probably my second or third coaching client when I was first getting started, probably 5 or 6 years ago. And this woman was saying that she was concerned about having MS. She has MS. She didn't want that to be a big part of her story because she didn't want to be defined by her illness. I don't want to be defined by this. And I said, well, that doesn't define you. It's how you talk about how it's impacted your life that defines you. Mm. So the story itself of I have MS and this is, you know, how I'm dealing with it, that's not what defines you. What defines you is how you tell it. And I remember saying that and going, huh, I kind of like that, and jotting it down somewhere. And
yeah, then it was, I mean, that's probably, later. Yeah, it's probably how it happened. You know, it just probably came out of somewhere. And yeah, I remember how I thought of Awaken Your Alpha, at least the concept and the show and the book, kind of all at the same time, because I was in a co-authored book. Back there somewhere. Yeah, The New Rules of Success in 2013. And that was, I did have a book written, and I had an opportunity to be in a co-authored book. So I thought, okay, I cut that down to a chapter, and I couldn't really see the connection between all these random authors, because I didn't have a piece in kind of curating that. And it was only when I met these guys and girls and, you know, later down the line and sat down and had a talk with them in person that I was like, ah, that's when the kind of the light bulb went off. That, you know, I was talking to a 60-year-old dentist from South Africa and I was a 30-something teacher from England. And we were having very, you know, there was a lot of similarities, at least in our approach to problems, challenges, you know, some sort of adversity had been in there. And I was like, these are good conversations. And I didn't feel like I definitely hadn't been exposed to them like that before. And that's when I had the thought for a book and a podcast kind of at the same time, because I knew I wasn't in a position to, you know, sit there researching a book for 4 years, but I could start a podcast. And that would share the, and that was, you know, I wanted to get that message out in terms of Awaken Your Alpha. And also I knew it would be a great research tool for the book.
Huh. That makes so much sense. Did you blog before you wrote your book?
Nope, not particularly. Huh. I mean, I did a little bit, but it was never like a passion or, it's not particularly, yeah, it's not,
how you built your brand.
No podcast. I've done some articles. Yeah, there's one about a silverback, actually. That's the last time I already mentioned it out there about, you know, what I learned from getting charged by a silverback. And then it's mainly I write for Podcast Magazine, category director for education. But yeah, podcasting is kind of my thing, and writing books. I love that. I love that. That's, you know, in years to come, I'll probably just be in a hut somewhere overlooking one of the Great Lakes, just writing books and doing writing. A little bit of and writing and just talking about writing the books on the podcast probably. that's the goal. Something like that.
You know, it sounds worthy to me. Sounds like a good time. Nice and low pressure, except whatever you put on yourself, right? Wow. That I'm so fascinated by that. What got you into the TEDx field? I mean, you did one.
Yeah.
And you found it really inspiring, or doing it, prepping for it.
Oh man, I can come at it from so many angles. I mean, and that's why I've kind of, I stayed in that kind of arena because a bit like that, where did Awaken Your Alpha come from? I can't remember when I didn't want to do a TEDx. Obviously, I can trace back when they started TED, and then I probably, you know, in education, I use TEDx talks and TED talks. You know, if you're teaching about a subject, you can then just YouTube it, and a TED talk will probably come up from someone who's dedicated their life to it, boiled it down to like 10, 15 minutes, way more interesting than you, than especially from a, you know, a pupil's point of view. And there you go. So I know they're used in education quite a lot. So that's probably my first exposure to it. I just was always like, I'd love to do a TED talk. I can't remember why or what. And then I just remember putting it on my kind of, I'm going to do one. When I moved to America. So I'd sometimes put things in order, and it's not always good to do that unless they're clearly thought out, because sometimes people put things in order as in, I'm not going to do that until I've got this, you know, I'm not going to be happy until I've achieved this, or, you know, my podcast is 1 million downloads, then I'll do this. And like certain things, just almost like barriers to yourself, but it was purely logistical. I thought, right, got to move country. That's quite a big job to take on. Once I've landed here, then I'll crack on with a TEDx. So I got here September 2015. So then got here, went after a TEDx, did it March 2016. And then from there, the questions people have always asked me since this all kind of kicked off is, how do you do a podcast? How do you do a TEDx? And I can help with both, but I definitely notice myself getting a little bit more fired up and energized when I talk about the TEDx side of things. And I felt like all my peers were podcasting and teaching about podcasting. And I kind of, you know, just because you can do something doesn't mean necessarily you should go down that route fully, you know? And so that right. I was like that, and I was feeling myself, you know, almost felt a bit pulled to help people with podcasting, but I was like, this, you know, I can, but it's not what I want to be all about. You know, it's a bit too overkill, like podcasting all day and then teaching people about podcasting. It's a bit like, you know, it's a bit overkill. So, but with the TEDx stuff, I just started, you know, people would ask me naturally, regardless of what I was talking about. And then I would you know, start asking, I start just casually advising people, then coaching people, then professionally coaching people, and then repeating myself a lot. So then I kind of evolved into this talk accelerator process, because I felt as well there was a lot of, you know, high-end coaches, one-to-one coaches that just did TEDx coaching. And I see a place for that, but also there's certain things you need to do regardless that you know, right. I wanted to open it up more. So with the Talk Accelerator podcast, obviously that's entirely free. You can get a lot from that. I believe you can get a TEDx from listening, and that will either inspire you or just one or two things, nuggets of wisdom in there that will definitely help. And then my Talk Accelerator is founded on like a small group process with like a 10 module training to go through. Yes, we have I just had one today, probably one of the best ones ever, actually. I have a group Q&A every Wednesday, like office hours where they can drop in and just, I don't want anyone to think holding them back. And that's that level of accountability we talked about before the interview. And I get a lot from that. And then obviously someone can work one-to-one with me if they want, but it's not a barrier. You don't have to work one-to-one with me. It's about getting right. your TEDx and securing and smashing it ultimately. So that's kind of how that evolved. And the reason there's a podcast on the back end of that is because I'm a podcaster and it was relatively easy for me to put that out and just put some more right. goodness out there.
More content, more great content. Yeah. Valuable that you knew would add value. What I find really fascinating about this whole, adventure journey, I guess, mm-hmm. the whole journey is that there are some of us that we come up with a message. And then we want to share it. Mm. And then there are those of us who come up with what we want to do and then create a message that works. And I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way, because I think it's a matter of once you decide. So I'm going to give you an example. When I was really struggling trying to figure out what to do next, this was like 8 years ago or so, maybe a little longer. And I was in a job where I was being treated really badly and my confidence was really in the toilet, and I couldn't figure out what I was good at. Like I was so low that when I looked at job position descriptions, I was like, no, I don't qualify. I had an MBA, but all of these job descriptions for state government, local government, I was like, oh, I don't really qualify for that. I'm not good at that. I don't do that very well. And my ego was just so damaged. And I remember taking this exercise from the book, It's Time to Sell by Chris Spurvey. And I give it as gifts to people all the time. But there was this exercise that I did where I jotted down the activities that really lit me up. What are the things that when I do them, I just shine. I feel so good about myself afterward.
Yeah.
And I just listed like four bullet points and I surprised myself with these four bullet points because I've tried not to think about it too hard. I just was writing it down, and writing was one of them. And then, that was about when I started my blogging, by the way, which created the need to write a book. But anyway, so I wrote down writing, and I thought public speaking. I love public speaking. And then workshops and training facilitation. I love that. Moderating conversations, panel conversations and stuff like that. But performance. That's all kind of under the umbrella of performance. And I had just started as a professional musician. So I was around 40 at the time and had never performed as a professional musician before that. And so performing clearly was something that was lighting me up. And I remember jotting these things down and realizing that these were the activities, and it almost didn't matter what the topic was related to those activities.
Yeah, well, I see that with like the TEDx thing for me is just, it's just a tool. It's about amplifying your message. You know, it can be a podcast, can be a TEDx, can be a book for me. And when you're talking about certain things and when you're really down low, like I just feel like everyone needs to back themselves more. I think that's what's kicking everyone's ass generally. It's very rare when you get someone who backs themselves too much, especially not an English person. We're too polite most of the time. You know, I kick myself when I find myself, you know, it's the stereotype of randomly saying sorry for stuff. That's definitely, there's some truth to that. You know, apologize.
Canadians too. Yeah.
So it's, I mean, yeah, I think people need to back themselves more. And like you're saying, when you send your ego, you were so down low and that you didn't feel like you qualified for anything. And,
but I think it's interesting. Fires
you up is important. Yeah.
Right. But what's interesting to me is that I kind of went backwards with it. I figured out what I loved to do before I figured out what the topic would be.
Yeah.
So kind of like you decided, I am going to be, I'm going to be a TEDx speaker. That's just what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a TEDx without necessarily figuring out what you wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Right.
It was just there. I didn't even know if, it was more initially, it was just like, I would like to do that someday, you know, and when the idea or the message kind of comes, then that's when I know, obviously it's definitely a time to move forwards on that. But I didn't put the pressure on to like, ooh, here's a TEDx. I better start thinking hard. What's my idea? The idea came first. And I think that's important to, you know, if you have aspirations for TEDx in some shape or form, it always comes back to the idea. And it doesn't have to be, it shouldn't be kind of crystal, but you should have kind of a general, like what you think you would kind of area you'd talk about, what's important to you, because it needs to be something, you know, not just to get a TEDx. It needs to be something like you've got an idea within you or message that needs to be shared in that format. Definitely.
Hmm. Yeah. Which is the opposite of when I decided I wanted to be a public speaker.
Hmm.
That's not necessarily true.
Well, I say with the TEDx as well, the other thing that I didn't even mention when you talk about public speaking, I also have always wanted to excel, and like public speaking fires me up. So I want to excel in that arena. And generally, this is from my point of view and people I've spoken to, if you want to excel in that arena, the TEDx talk or TEDx speaker is kind of a no-brainer for me personally, because of that level of credibility it just stamps you with, and it opens some doors. And just like going through the process, forgetting about the credibility side, you can't do a TEDx without going through the process in terms of really doing some hard work. Even if you don't think you need it, you go through it. There's no way around it in prepping. And it's just an exercise in reduction, you know, and it's so good to clarify things. If you can really give the best, you know, 40-minute talk on, you know, an idea worth sharing, well, that's so much more powerful when you can give a 15-minute talk of the same content.
Right. So, and that's all people are going to remember anyway.
Yeah, it's tough. Like my next TEDx will be 10 or 12 minutes, because I went right up to 18. And that's again, more ego-led, or and a combination of I didn't have the time it took to get that down to a 10 or 12 minute, which would have been a better talk. Because, you know, that's the opportunity was there. I did the work. It was the best I could do in the time I had at that time. And, you know, 4 or 5 years later, I secured another TEDx because I have a new kind of something idea that I really want to share. And also from digging into this arena for so long, you know, you can't unlearn what you know. And I'm like, there's things that I need another run at it, and then I'm done.
Well, what I love about
at least
it is
for now.
Even if you just decide you're going to apply to be a TEDx speaker, just being able to develop that clarity to think about applying. And then what I found is that I believe that there's no coincidence. I think the things happen for a reason, and we may never know the reason, but I just don't believe that there's any such thing as coincidence. And part of that is I believe that we learn from every experience, every single thing that happens in our lives. We have an opportunity. We don't necessarily learn, but we have an opportunity to learn something from. And my example is that I did apply for a TEDx in Montana last year, and I didn't put a lot of effort into it because it was kind of a random, oh, maybe I'll do this. And I know that I could have put a lot more time into it. And so I felt okay. My strengths and StrengthsFinder are the top two are strategic activator. So once I get an idea, I get the sense of urgency and I just do it. And that's what I did with my application. And I knew I could have done better. So I also knew that it wouldn't surprise me if I didn't get it, right? Yeah. Because I knew I hadn't put in.
It's like a low pressure situation, kind of, you just kind of a punt. And I think that's what a lot of people do. And that's why, you know, there's opportunity.
Which was fine for me at the time because I had a lot of other things going on, and it was a punt. I already had keynotes scheduled for this year, so I didn't need it necessarily. I just thought, oh, well, I'll give it a try. What was interesting is that it did help me clarify the message that I want to share at some point. But what happened was I got the letter from the TEDx organizers, the committee, saying that they would really love for me to apply for the next one. My presentation was in the first, it got into the final selection round.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking really close, right? I was in the final.
And that's like you say, that's without putting a huge amount of time into it, it sounds as well.
Yes, exactly. And so I was really touched by that. And then they said, that it was more a matter of making sure that the people who were selected fit the theme and had kind of the general curriculum in mind for their, for that theme, for that particular TEDx, and that they really would love for me to apply again next time because it was so close.
Yeah.
And I read it and I kind of ignored it, didn't think about it. And then it wasn't until probably 2 months later, I'm walking on the mountain behind my house, which is where I always...
Oh, I remember about this. I love you. Talk about the mountain behind your house. I love this.
I always find inspiration on that mountain, and lately especially, but I always find inspiration. So it's 2 months later, I'm walking on the mountain and it dawned on me, like I had this amazing lightning bolt of clarity of my message, which was not what I had been thinking it was when I applied to do it. And I'm so relieved that I didn't get it, even though they had to cancel it because it would have happened in April and everything got canceled. But I was kind of relieved that I didn't get it because I would have been practicing this message that isn't the right message now that I've been thinking longer and harder about it and developed clarity.
Well, that's an interesting thing about that is like once you, and this is kind of my process, once you secure that TEDx, within reason, you can kind of not say whatever you want because you work in collaboration with the organizer. But once you're in, you know, there's scope. I think all organizers, the good ones anyway, want you to develop your idea. So once they're in and you work, you know, you've got that communication back and forth. If like through the process, it becomes, oh, it's kind of more like this way. You're kind of already in to a certain extent. You're going to have to be really hard to get kicked out at that point. And obviously if they say like, that's an awful idea. No, you can't do that. Then you can always go back or work with it. But yeah, once you're in, there's scope. It's all about, you know, getting in ultimately. Then when you're in, then you're in the process. And I know from speaking to a lot of, and interviewing a lot of organizers, they don't like the person. This is a general statement who comes in with, this is my idea. Even if they like the idea, this is it. And this is very fixed minded. Like even if you're doing the work, this is it. And it kind of, they want at least being critical of your own idea and coming at it and developing it. And because things come up that you can't guess unless you do the work. Yeah.
Right. They want people who are self-reflective.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people who are so gung ho about a particular message that are so rigid in what they think it is, that they forget that there is an audience out there that may not see.
Oh, yes. And these are the people that I will help in idea these complimentary idea clarity calls, but I will be very wary about, you know, working with them because, again, the number one thing that's going to stop people getting on the stage is things like that and, you know, and just being your own worst enemy and just not listening, to not being coachable, basically. So, you know,
it's across the world. I mean, as far as professionals and even relationships, if you're not coachable, if you're not flexible and self-reflective, so you see where you're getting in your own way, then you're always going to find some level of dissatisfaction.
Yeah. I like the statement, you know, and I feel like I've said this a lot recently to people. I'm always happy to hear when someone says like, and I say this, you know, I'm always open to the fact that I could be completely wrong. When we're starting from that point of view, or that's kind of in the conversation, I feel like, you know, people's minds are open to all sorts of things and opinions, and you can, you know, you can evolve quite a bit then.
Yes. I think between that and the person who says, I can see how things are connected, you know, being open to being wrong and also being able to see why something that you think might be a contradiction or a conflict is actually connected and complementary.
Mm.
I love that mentality when you can open it up and see it from a more global perspective and say, oh, that's why that happened. And you know, see those connections. That I'd love to see that light bulb go on.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, and I love talking about light bulbs. I mean, I love hearing people's potential ideas worth sharing. You know, you talk about like doing things that fire you up. Technically that's work for me, but oh my goodness, it's great. You know, that then, you know, I'm giving my time for that on a Thursday generally. And, but it's, you know, hearing people's potentially like their ideas worth sharing, like their best stuff. They want their like legacy piece to go on there. You know, it's very hard for that to be boring. Like, regardless of what their idea is, this is what they're bringing to the table. And it's, you know, so far it's just been, you know, it's good. And it's really, when I started the podcast, at least the podcast side of it, my initial, one of the reservations about doing that, apart from it's another podcast and I know what the work involved in that, and I don't want to be multi-podcast guy, at least hosting them. is that I'm going to start getting very similar answers over and over again, like a TEDx organizer. But like people, they are, every individual is different and how they run their event and how you get into it. So that was a nice revelation. And also that I'm always learning. I thought, you know, once you asked, you know, these questions enough times, you'd be like, yeah, I get the idea. Yeah, repeat, repeat. But it's not. It's like everyone's in, there's contradictions. There's, you know, someone will have a completely different opinion. So it's very localized and individualized.
And which culture is, oriented.
Yeah, yeah. And it dependent on their area or their, you know, how many years their TEDx event's been going, you know, how big it is, how small it is. Yeah, it's just, it's interesting. And I don't think it's ever not going to be, which is good.
I love that. I love to hear the passion in your voice because you sense the passion in the people that you're working with.
Yeah.
There's something so beautiful and engaging about that, that enthusiasm. And it reminds me of when I was in high school and being one of the only Jewish kids in the school. And I sang with the choir. I was singing with the chamber singers, which is magical music, you know, super intense, complex harmonies. And somebody asked me if it was okay if I would sing the Christmas music. And I'm like, what do you mean? Of course. I love the Christmas music. And they said, oh, but you're Jewish. You don't believe it. And I told this guy the story of when I was a junior, my friend was a senior. We were in chamber singers together. She was a soprano and she sang O Come Emmanuel at the first verse as a solo. And the rest of us, the seven of us, were standing on the stage on the risers waiting for her. And she came in from the back, or from the doors, walking down the aisle of the auditorium, singing in her pure soprano voice, O come Emmanuel. And she was a Christian and she believed it with all her heart.
Yeah.
And every time she practiced it, every time I heard it, and during the performance, people wept. It didn't matter what religion you were, or if you didn't have religion at all. It's because her passion for it was so powerful. You couldn't help but feel her love for it. And that's, I think when you can do that as a speaker or as a performer of any kind, you can't help but get your audience just completely into the palm of your hand.
Yeah. No, I love that. Totally. Totally. Nothing to add on that one. I love it.
Awesome. I love your enthusiasm, Adam. From the moment we met, I was just definitely ready to take this relationship and connect it even more deeply.
Actually, I do have something to add, because when I got into the interviewing, I was always thinking from a speaker's point of view, because obviously I'm a speaker and that's, I come at it, I've never organized a TEDx and I looked into that and that's not the route I want to go. But then what part of the questions I always ask in the interviews as well is, why, again, I'm thinking from the speaker's point of view, why a TEDx for you? Why did you go after it? Why did you want to do it? So on the flip, looking from a completely different perspective, from the TEDx organizer's point of view, which is a voluntary role, why a TEDx for you? Why organize a TEDx? Like, what attracted you? What is your why behind that? And that's been fascinating as well, to really understand where they're coming at it from as well. And, you know, because a lot of the organizers are very entrepreneurial and it's this whole like minds attract, and there's a big thing about the community in it as well. And just, yeah, it's always different, which is interesting. And find that about the person behind the event as well. Because, you know, some of these events are huge. Like one TEDx is, even in my state, you've got events that, you know, their first time, usually limited to 100 people. And then that's a level one. So I didn't even know that when I first started digging into the next level. They have level one events, level two events. And then you have, like in Detroit, that's been going for like 10 years. They've been building up, getting bigger venues every year. And they were planned in September or around that time this year, they were going to be in the stadium, like a 60,000 person stadium for a TEDx event. And
that's,
I'm like,
humongous.
Exactly.
Wow, and if you weren't nervous then.
Yeah, I mean, I would prefer to do that TEDx event than do an actual TED event, in terms of, that's huge. And that's in a stadium. And it's like, I was like, wow, there's just so much to it. And yeah, and some people's goals are to build their TEDx event. Some people are, you know, it's just completely different. Some people have no aspirations to get beyond a certain size. And, you know, it's just, you know, and some people are like, I'll do this for a couple of years. I want to get this experience and move on. Others are like in it for the long haul. It's just, Fascinating stuff. Yeah.
I love it when I hear them talk about why they do it when it's from the audience perspective. Like, my community needs to hear these ideas.
Oh, yeah.
My community will love this. It'll be meaningful to them. It'll bring us together.
There's a lot of that where they're like, I wanted to bring this, because usually they're the first person to bring it to their area, because obviously they have licenses for certain areas. So that's also a big part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I do that with my coaching clients when I'm working with people who want to be public speakers or are public speakers that want to improve in their public speaking. When I'm helping them develop their stories, I ask them, like, what do you want your audience to feel? Why do you do this? It's not for you, right? I mean, you love it and it lights you up, but it has to be about your audience and what you want or what you believe they can get out of it. So, yeah. Oh, that's magic. I love it.
Most people, especially sort of people who listen to this podcast, wouldn't. But I mean, just it's jumping to mind in terms of, I want to give, you know, tips, and I can go into that for ages. But one thing that jumps to mind, you know, like you said, think about the audience. Never, even if you've got all this great credibility behind you, if you've won a Nobel Peace Prize and you've got a New York Times bestseller and all this stuff, do not lead with that. Because TEDx organizers, on the most bluntest thing, don't care. They kind of do, but they will find that out. You know, they got a computer. They can find that out pretty easy. Lead with your idea worth sharing. Because if you come across with any kind of vibe of, check me out, this is what I've done, you should have me on your stage, where's the mention of the idea? And they, you know, genuinely, it's about the idea. It's not about, genuinely, it's not about you. So it's great if you've got all that other stuff. If you come with a, you know, that kind of, vibe of service, and this idea needs to be shared, and this is a great fit for your event, all the other stuff will come out. And that's just because that's like benefits of the sort of person you are and what you've been doing, but don't lead with that. And I hear that, you know, you think, yeah, that sounds like a no-brainer, but a lot of people lead like that. And again, awareness, some people don't realize they're leading like that, and they shoot themselves in the foot, and they're probably not that level. But I've heard lots of organizers say, kind of like, the bigger deal someone is, the more likely they are to lead with that, and it doesn't go well, would be my advice.
Right. And the more likely it is that they're going to shut down the audience and not light them up.
Well, in terms of a TEDx, they won't get to that stage because, yeah, the organizer, from my experience, would be like, oh, you carry on being your big deal over there, and I'm going to run my event for, you know, for decent people with ideas. Yeah.
I can tell you, as an event planner, those kind of people, I don't want to work with them because they're going to be the highest maintenance people. Exactly. They're going to be the ones that are hardest to work with. And I'm not going to choose to work with somebody that is full of themselves like that. Yeah.
And this TEDx organizer is a voluntary position, number one. And
this
person, if they've led like that, is coming across like they're doing the event organizer a favor. And, you know, you should be grateful to have me kind of vibe. And But again, so if that person genuinely wants to get on the TEDx stage, just don't do that.
Don't lead that way. Exactly. Oh,
and even if, and this goes all the way down to, let's say you've got a podcast and a book. It doesn't have to be a bestseller, but you lead with, hey, and thinking that, you know, that's not where your heart is, but you think this is going to help you get on. So you're like, you've got a great idea, but you just pitch it wrong in terms of, hey, I'd love to do a TEDx. I've got a best-selling book. I've got this, I've got that. And then you say, and I've got this idea. They've already heard the self-promotion kind of, even if that's not your intention. So I just wanted to wash that over, because that's a shame when people, like the right people, don't get through because they're unknowingly shooting themselves in the foot.
Well, I appreciate that tip. And I think our listeners will too. I'm sure there are people out there listening to this podcast that are thinking about that they have a brilliant idea that they want to share. And so for our listeners, I will have a link to Adam's website so that you can learn more about what he does. And I love his podcast, Awaken Your Alpha. And this actually goes right back to that very first part of the conversation of that gorilla coming at you. And you are your own gorilla. And you have to stand up. You have to learn enough to know when to turn and end the charge.
Like it.
Adam, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. This has been so much fun. I don't remember.
I'm glad the comparison didn't, you know, compare to, like, talking to Adam is like talking to a gorilla. I'm glad there was no extra, like, yeah, and Adam, you know, this interview has been like charged by a gorilla. So I'm glad the comparison stopped there. It's been a lot of fun. I looked at the time, like, wow, this time just flew. And I hope I, you know, gave value to the audience and you got what you wanted, but it was a really nice conversation that just flowed. Thank you.
Absolutely. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you for listening to Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. If you're planning an event or company retreat and want to bring in a memorable, entertaining, and highly practical speaker as your keynote speaker or workshop facilitator, please visit us at elkinsconsulting.com to learn how we can help and provide a memorable keynote or breakout session. Thank you. I look forward to hearing from you.
Listen to me, honey, while I say, how could you tell me that you're going?